I am so excited about this episode. My good friend, Dr. Steve Morielli, is on the show. He's an educator, professor of criminal justice. He is a retired federal agent of many years of dedicated service. And last but not least, he is the host of the great podcast, the Cop Doc Podcast. Now, in this episode, Steve and I talk about a variety of things going on within the criminal justice community and how you can become better personally and professionally. You do not want to miss this episode. Dr. Steve Morielli, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked CJ Evolution Podcast. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. I am grateful for each and every one of you that tune in to the show. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Give us that five-star rating and review. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for doing it. And remember this, among all the noise that's out there, among all the people that don't like the CJ profession, and I still believe that the majority of people out there do, remember this, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work, take care of each other, and most of all, come home safe. You know, it's such an honor to be partnered with a great company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of this company, you got to check them out. The link is at cjevolution.com. They are helping keep you, the first responder, safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand. Now, folks, if you do not have Detectachem in your organization, you need to get them. Again, head over to cjevolution.com. This application technology is a must-have. Detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. Again, head over to cjevolution.com. See how Detectachem can help keep your troops safer. On to the show with the one and only Dr. Steve Morielli. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You know, I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, Dr. Stephen A. Morielli. On the show, he's an amazing individual. He has an amazing podcast, which he's going to talk about. Just a very distinguished law enforcement career along the way. He still does great things for the profession, our brave men and women. Stephen, welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Patrick. It's good to be here. I'm here in Boston in the evening.
Well, and what's the weather like in Boston, Stephen?
Well, I just got back from South Carolina, where when it was 17 degrees here and it was 70 degrees here, there. And I thought to myself, what the hell am I going back north? But you understand that you're going from colder to warmer pretty soon, as we talked about. But we're about 60 degrees. The sun is starting to come out. The little jonquils are coming out. So it's, you know, you start to, the snow has gone. So there is spring in the air and hope in the future. Yeah. I got my two shots. So I'm feeling
there you
much
go.
Better.
Yep. Yeah, you're completely covered.
So they say.
You know, I haven't, Boston is such an amazing city. I was there, a little side note. I was there. I don't think I told you, Steve, but I was there years ago. I think it was probably 20 years ago. And I remember going to Cheers. I don't know if it's still around. Cheers still around?
No, it's actually the Hampshire House, but it was the real Cheers downstairs, not too far away from the State House. Probably 10 steps away from the State House. Yes.
And for all the young people out there listening to the show going, what the hell is Cheers? Cheers was an amazing, Ted Danson was in it. He was a bartender.
Christy Alley.
Yeah, Christy Alley. You know, back in the day, it was a very, very funny show for all you young people out there listening. Well, that's sad. It's gone. Well, nothing ever lasts, does it, my friend?
No, it doesn't.
You spent 30 years in this profession, law enforcement, different capacities, different agencies. I always ask law enforcement, retired military, people who serve, why they got into what they were doing. I'm going to ask you the same thing, Stephen. Why did you want to serve? Why did you want to wear a uniform and protect and serve and all that stuff?
Well, the uniform wearing started when I was probably just out of high school, and I jumped in an auxiliary department, and it just whet my appetite about policing. I had tried out some firefighting stuff, and I just gravitated to policing. And at one point in time, because I am Vietnam era, I was watching, and I think you probably had the same experience, Patrick, as a military guy yourself. you know, you're sitting with aunts and uncles, they're talking, and they're talking about their time and the suck or in the service, whatever it is. And and you think to yourself, it seemed like a suck when we were going through it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At first. But I found that I had just missed the draft, and colleagues of mine in high school had been drafted, and I felt almost guilt. But there was something missing, so I ended up going and enlisting in the Army. And I remember going to the recruiter, and the recruiter said to me, "What do you want to do?" And honestly, Patrick, this is kind of a strange thing. My original intention was to be a radio broadcaster. How ironic is that we're both podcasters now, right? And so he said, "Well, you can do Armed Forces Radio, but there's probably about 300 jobs in the Army. Mm-hmm. Do you have a second choice?" I said, "Yeah." A friend of mine had come back from Vietnam, was walking the beat. I would walk with him in Massachusetts. I walked the beat, and I got the bug at that point in time. And so I went in. I was an MP.
Yeah.
I traveled the world. I was stationed as a plainclothes investigator later on in Italy, of all places.
Wow.
And I lived on the economy. Great experience. Came back. As you know, the GI Bill is helpful to us, those who serve. It's one of the, I guess, the repayments for our service. So I went back to school, applied to many different departments, and ended up in the police department in New Hampshire.
Wow. Well, again, thank you for your service, sir, and to the military and in law enforcement. You know, what are some of the highlights of your career, Stephen? I mean, we could probably talk all day about this, mm-hmm. but what were some of the things that really stuck out? If you could name a couple of them that really, really stuck out in your career as being, you know, amazing.
Well, I was with the police department for 5 years, and I was a detective when I left. And I had gone back for my master's degree, and there was a kid who was, I was a field training officer, and you could appreciate mm-hmm. this. And New Hampshire is pretty damn cold in February. So it's 2 below 0. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It might be a Sunday or a Monday. And the kid says to me, "Now I'm deciding whether or not he's going to be a police officer. He's going to make it through." And he says, "Steve, are you staying with Dover for the rest of your life?" So, "Well, of course I am." He said, "Because I'm leaving." This is a recruit.
Wow.
"I'm leaving and I'm going to the Drug Enforcement Administration, and you should think about it too." I said, "What do you mean?" And honest to God, at that moment, when I'm looking up and I'm seeing it says 2 below 0, and you know the heaters in the cars are of no value when it's 2 below 0 at old dark 30. And I went home and I talked to my wife and I said, "You know, I think I'm going to apply." I applied to DEA. I spent 20 years with DEA. I was a manager. I traveled all over the world. And that's why I want to say, before I tell you what the highlights were, mm-hmm. I think they were highlights. Look, being a local police officer was the best experience I ever had. And it made me a better DEA agent. And it made me drive, especially when I was a manager, the mindset and mentality of other agents that police are your friends. Don't be arrogant. Don't think you're better than them. In other words, work with each other. We've all got a badge. We work together. So travel was amazing. My first fatal, Patrick, I'm sorry to say, and I don't mean to say this glibly, mm-hmm. But was seven people. And it was in Italy, and it was 2 cars, 4 Italians, 3 Americans, head on, 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was the worst carnage I've ever seen. In mm-hmm. fact, one of them, we didn't realize where they were. They were impaled in a tree.
Ah, jeez.
Didn't see them until daylight came.
That's some speed.
Speed it was. And back then, they didn't have seatbelts.
Yeah.
So it was the experience of that. It was the experience of solving crime. It was the thrill of the chase. And it was making friends and acquaintances and relationships with people you were going to police, which I think is a very important factor in local policing.
Yeah. And I always ask, you know, what are the highlights? We all know the dark part of policing and police work and service. But if you could go back, Steve, and change anything, would you? Or would you just say, "No, I don't want to change anything"? Because people have different takes on this.
No, I miss it. But I also know. So, what your audience may not know, your listeners may not know, is I have I have catapulted to a second career. I'm a second career academic. So I'm a professor. Mm-hmm. I'm a professor of criminal justice at Worcester State University. I'm the chair of the department. There are 10 faculty members, another 5 or 6 adjuncts like yourself, and I started as an adjunct. Mm-hmm. So I'm still dealing with young people, and some are have an opportunity to be a police officer. Some never will. I'd say 30% going to a CJ program are interested in policing, and a little less now because of what we see.
Yeah.
But no, personally, I have no regrets whatsoever. I would not want to do it any other way. Sometimes I miss it, and other times I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, I don't regret. I mean, I always look at everything as like a learning experience, even though it might suck going through it, you know, and you might wish, God damn it, why am I going through this? I don't regret anything, you know, I don't, because I don't, first of all, I don't think it's healthy, because then you get into that state of, you know, living in the past, in my opinion, and, you know, the past is the past. And I'm like you, I miss it. You know, I don't think I'd go back, you know, I don't have to go back, but I do miss it. But I don't regret anything. I've made mistakes along the way, a lot of mistakes, but they always guided me in you know, the right path. What do they say? You know, one door closes, another one opens, kind of thing.
Well, there's no question about that. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, I'm able to, like yourself, when you're in the classroom, whether it is teaching people who are doing the job and trying to advance, or teaching people who are interested in getting in. I think we need to be very honest about what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, extremely honest. Actually, today I had a class, I was teaching an investigations class, and fortunately we're doing it on Zoom, but I brought in a colleague of mine who used to be a student, and he is now a detective sergeant in the Metropolitan Police, and he's responsible for one of the 6 homicide squads. So to bring this guy in to these students who would never have access, and he explained right from the beginning the good and the bad. And that's what we have. I think those of us who have served, that's what we have. We have a connection that never ends, as you well know.
Yeah.
If you were a cop and you were a decent cop and you cared and you reach out and you say you were a cop to another cop, boy, do things change.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, they open the doors to you.
Well, look at our connection, Steve. When we started talking, when we met a while ago, we just had the connection. I mean, you know, military, law enforcement background, myself. And we just had that connection and it just flowed. I can call up any one of my military friends from 20 something years ago and it would be like we were talking, you know, yesterday.
No question.
You know, and same with law enforcement.
No question.
And that's that bond. Now, the one thing I noticed, because I teach, you mentioned I'm an adjunct, I teach, but the one thing I noticed, and maybe it's different, you know, with you, Steve, is that when I ask students, know, what do you want to do? And hardly any of them. I mean, they always talk about DEA, FBI, the federal service, which is fine. But a very small percentage of them, at least my students, want to be street cops. And I don't know if that's just like because of TV and the movies and all these, you know, what's going on. I mean, there's like a third of the shows out there are cop shows and they talk about FBI and all, which is cool. But most students, I always tell them, you know, they want to be a homicide detective. And I always tell them, you know, you got to start out on the street.
Right out of the academy, right?
Yeah, you got to start out on the street. I always tell them, go on Monster, you know, that job search and see how many homicide detectives, you know, are listed there. And you got to start out on the street. And I, like you, I think the greatest time I ever had was when I was a street cop, just a street cop, you know, and I try to encourage that. But a lot of my students, they just don't seem like they're interested. And it could be the environment.
Well, you know, we talk about it all the time. I'm lucky to teach a capstone, which is getting them ready for the future. And I'll tell you, we just talked a little bit ago about a budget. Now I'm talking to 21-year-olds about a budget. Hey, guys, pretty soon you're going to be out on your own and mom and dad aren't going to be paying for some stuff. So let's talk about what you have to pay. And then we talk about, well, how much do you think you're going to make as a police officer? And they, you know, 60, 70. And I laugh. You're delusional is what I say. That's not going to happen. 40, 45, 35, 50 maybe. But let's see how much of that money is going to get eaten up by the things you have to pay for. And they almost want to cry like, this sucks. Like life in reality sucks. So it's about, I think what I'm trying to convey to you is it's about being realistic.
Yeah.
And also saying, look, you're not going to be a DEA agent. You're not going to be an FBI agent. You're not going to be a Secret Service agent at 21. You're just not going to do it. The average age to become a federal agent is about 27 to 29. You have to be out by the time you're 57, which means you can't join until after you're 37. Yeah. So they're looking, having hired many, they're looking for people who have experience, who have sort of sowed their oats. Military is a good way to pass some time and get some experience and get some discipline. But really, you've got to find something to do. And I can find nothing more important if you're going to get into that business than to become a local police officer. Yeah. And keep your, you know, and do it properly, do it ethically, and do the job and stay out of trouble.
Yeah. And I tell people, and you made a great point about, look, you can't do it for the money. You're not going to make shit. You know, you do it because you have a calling for it. You do it because you generally want to help people. And I know it's a cliche, but you have to want that. You have to be passionate about the job. And I tell kids that want to decide to go the patrol route or local officer route. First of all, that's great. But do your research, man. Nothing baffled me more before I retired. We had a handful of people that would go through the whole thing and realize that, you know, it's not for them. And people are people and people are different, but it's like, do your research. Go on ride-alongs. It's not the TV. Let me tell you, cop work, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, but for the listeners out there, I tell this all the time. Cop work is not what you see on television. It's not driving 90 miles an hour in SWAT gear, kicking down doors.
No.
That's a very small percentage of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, I think another thing that I want to say is that I'm one lucky fella. I really feel that. I keep my finger on the pulse. I am still teaching, and not just students, but earlier I was in Rhode Island. There's a New England regional, we call it Justice System Training and Research Institute. So I had 30 sergeants from New England.
That's awesome.
And so we're talking about these kinds of things. Who's coming to the table? How are you getting people ready? You know, what's it like to lead? What are you, crazy? You wanted to become a sergeant? You were in pretty good shape as a senior officer. What are you thinking?
Because you know the first seniority.
You start over. Yeah, you know, I liken it to this, Patrick, and you know this. It's like being the star of the football or baseball team in high school. You're a senior. You are the cock of the walk. Yeah. And now you come to college. Yeah. And unless you are a superstar, you are at the bottom of the pack and working your way up. It's the same thing with the sergeant, right? The first thing you do is we're going to say, thank you. Welcome. You're now responsible for 7 to 10 other people. Good luck with that. And you're on midnight.
Wow. I was going to say, you're on Graves.
Exactly.
for the foreseeable future.
And that's what I said. I said, and you guys look smarter than you are, because is that really what you wanted to do? And they all shake their head. But all of them say there's room for improvement. Yeah. All of them say that we have to become more customer centric in a lot of ways. And what I say in talking to them is, hey guys, as you become sergeants, you have to, like with your own kids, and I'm not equating cops with kids, but what you have to do is set expectations more than once. You can't just say, this is what I want you to do. You have to remind them. You have to coach them. You have to mentor them. You have to protect them. And I say a sergeant is a blocking back, not the quarterback. The sergeant blocks. And what they do is they block the cops. You know, you were a commander. Mm-hmm. They block the cops from the front office so they can do their job. And they block the cops from those citizens, not the good citizens, but the citizens that are pecking at them and to let them do their job. And I think that's an important piece. And I hope that you would sort of, you know, I don't want you to agree with me, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think the sergeants, and I've always said this, the patrol sergeants are probably one of the most critical roles. I mean, everybody is important in an organization. I'm not trying to downplay that, but you know, the street supervisors, the sergeants, the corporals, every department's different instructor, but the sergeants are central. They are key. They act as the intermediary buffer, whatever
you
want to call it.
What's up? So Patrick, let me say this. So this is what I say to the sergeants. Hey guys, to your crew, you're the boss. It's not the chief. It's not the lieutenant. Yeah. You're the boss, right? And so it becomes very, very important. And people who are cops who are listening, they know exactly what we're talking about. But for those who are interested, I have to say that most people join police departments as police officers and they retire as police officers. Mm-hmm. Not many. Isn't that true? Not many. It's not important, but so few people raise their hand and say, I want to climb the ladder.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I have really good friends that never. And first of all, for those who are listening, and you would probably agree with this, Steve, at least I think it's okay not to promote up. It's perfectly okay. I think the problem with some agencies is they kind of look at you with a second head when you know, somebody comes to you and says, hey, Steven, we want you to test for the next process, whatever. And you say, nah, I'm not interested. And they're like, what? Why? Well, some people don't want to be supervisors, and it's perfectly okay. Some of the best leaders, the best people, the change agents in the organization that I've ever worked with don't have rank.
No.
They were just regular street officers. And I have good friends that never promoted up. Mm-hmm. They are the happiest cops out there.
I agree with you 100%. And you know, as I climbed the ladder, and I'm glad I did,
I
tell you what, but by jumping in the, you know, climbing the ladder and being responsible for other people, you've got calluses on your ass because someone's always biting you.
Yeah.
Someone's always saying, you know, you're not tough enough. You're too tough, whatever it is. And you take care of this and take like, it, because what we spend a lot of time, and I spend a lot of time talking about leadership and what that means. Mm. And, you know, I think that's an important element. And that's why I love the opportunity of giving back, because I feel that way.
And
I have to say, you know, people will call me Doc, and I'm Steve. That's all I am, especially to a colleague. Mm-hmm. And when I walk into a room, and I'll tell you, Patrick, when you're walking into a room where you're teaching, I guarantee you, you're learning something yourself from those students.
Of course. I always tell people, look, I tell people, you know, it's in my syllabus. I tell people when I start a class, you know, unfortunately it's a lot of Zoom stuff, as you know now. Mm-hmm. But I tell people, look, I want to learn from you. Yeah. Hopefully you're going to, it's a quid pro quo kind of thing.
It's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street. I'm just not, first of all, that's not my style. I just don't like sitting up there doing PowerPoints and stuff like that. I just don't like doing that shit. I want to hear from you. I want to hear your experiences. You know, I could put a PowerPoint up there, Steve, and talk about whatever. I'm not talking about war stories, because I think there's a time and a place. I do not like just telling war stories.
Me neither.
People get bored.
Yes.
But I could have a PowerPoint up there, and I'll be stuck on the slide, you know, for the same slide for an hour, because we're just engaged in that great conversation and that participation. I love it.
I mean, you're asking questions. What do you think about that? What's your perspective? What's your, and I think as much as anything, I mean, I don't mean to digress into teaching, but what becomes important is having that conversation, that dialogue. But I will say this, when I'm doing a training on leadership, and that's one of the mm-hmm. foci, if you will, but it's the focus of what I do, is I talk about them. I say, look, what have I done to draw you out? You know, what have I done? I've been asking you questions. You've been listening to one another. You've been learning from one another. That's what you have to need. Excuse me. That's what you need to do with your squad.
Yeah.
Engage them. Tell them what is on the minds of the front office. Tell them what they're looking to do. And don't order them. Just say, how can we do this, guys? Mm-hmm. How can we make this go away so we can go on to do other things? And it's, you know, we have to utilize the intellectual capacity of our people, right? I think that's really very important.
Well, you have to get to know your people too. One of my failures when I was a new commander, you know, a lot to learn, you know, drinking from the fire hose, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, I remember one of my sergeants came in, and I would do quarterly sergeant, just meet with the sergeants. And I was a small agency, so I'd see him every day too. But I remember one of my sergeants came in and said, and I asked him, I said, so-and-so, I'm not going to name his name, but I said, you know, how are things going? You know, how's life? How's your wife and family? And he said, well, I got divorced like, you know, 2 months ago or 3 months ago. And I was like, shit, I failed you, because I didn't, my point in that is, for the leaders out there, get to know your people. I'm not saying you need to know every intimate detail about them, but you need to know your people, because then you're going to, and you know this, Steve, then you're going to recognize when things aren't right. I failed because I wasn't paying attention. So get to know your people. You know,
get
to know
from those mistakes.
Yeah,
I mean, you learn from those mistakes. And I think it's important, you know, when we talk about this idea of leadership, the conception and the difference between management and leadership. And we work on that. And what does that mean? And how is it to you? And how much time do you spend leading versus managing and all of that kind of stuff? One of the conversations that we have is, if you're going to ignore what's going on because it's not, you know, it's a personal matter, especially in policing, guess what? You're responsible for what happens out there. And if one person is pissed at another, and that happens, and you haven't tried to correct it, that's going to fall on your shoes.
Of course.
You're the sergeant. You're the lieutenant. It's on you. You have to supervise that. You can't say, that's none of my business. It's personal. No different than what you see. Look at social media. and what mm-hmm. what people say on social media right now. You can't do that as a cop. I mean, the cancel culture is killing us.
Yeah.
To say, oh no, 15 years ago or 30 years ago, Patrick wrote this. It was 15 years ago. Yeah. So we have to be very cognizant of what we do and what our public face is when it comes to social media.
Yeah. Now, I know I'm going to ask you a question. I know you get this a lot, but I'm going to ask you anyway. We were talking about this before we started. Is, you know, you get this a lot, Stephen. I know students coming to you and saying, what advice would you give me, you know, professor or doctor, you know, getting into law enforcement? What key pieces of advice would you give me? Because I'm really interested in becoming a cop.
Well, I think what people, so what you said about this a little bit ago resonates quite well. And that is everybody wants to be a CSI investigator, or they want to be a canine officer.
It's a CSI effect, you know.
Oh, no question about that. And I have to say to them, look, let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. CSI probably has 30,000 people in the business. I think it's less than that. And mm-hmm. the people who do that are not necessarily police officers. They're chemists. Mm-hmm. They're biologists. Right? That's what they are. Yeah. And so your chance of doing that is virtually nil unless you get an advanced degree in that area. But you know, what you have to say is this is a lifestyle. It is a change. Oh, it is a commitment. It's much like being in the military, because are you prepared? Actually, I say this to everybody. Soon as you sign on the dotted line for a new job where you no longer have the umbilical cord of college, they begin to own you. You get 3 weeks off. Sometimes they'll tell you when you can take the 3 weeks off. You're going to be on midnights, right? You're going to be out of sync with everybody else you went to college with, because they got a 9-to-5 job and you're just waking up at 5 to go in on midnights. And it is a major commitment, and keep that in mind.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're going to take that job, you need to go in eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Right. It's an extremely important job. You know that. And I absolutely love police as you do. I love good police. And there's a few morons out there that make it bad for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those. But the badge and the patch is extremely important. And I say, when you raise your right hand to be sworn, you're taking on a significant responsibility. Just keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Well said, my friend. And if I could piggyback on that a little bit, I also tell people, look, there's a pretty good chance you're not going to have some of the friends that you have now once they find out you became a cop. Mm-hmm. I have never talked to, and anything's possible, but I've never talked to a Leo or somebody in federal service that had the same friends. What they usually tell me, and it happened to me, well, I lost some friends. Well, and I tell them they're really not your friends, because they should support you no matter what you want to do. But I always tell students, look, you might not have the same friends you have now once some of your, quote, friends figure out that you're a cop now.
Well, you know, Patrick, on a completely side note, that, you know, on campuses, we have conversations. The conversations I have, is, you know, many CJ students, and I'm not saying we don't have liberal CJ students, and I don't want to get into too much of that, but are very conservative. And what they'll tell me sometimes is they can't open their mouths in some classes because they'll be ridiculed because they favor or because they're studying and understand policing, that basically they're sticking up for police. And others will say, what are you talking about? You know, they're all jackboot thugs, and I don't buy that.
Ridiculous. Now, what do you think, Stephen? I mean, you mentioned, and I have my finger on the pulse too, of what's going on. We all know the current environment, law enforcement. And it's not all bad. First of all, I think the majority of people, I think, support law. In fact, I know support law enforcement. They support our brave men and women. I wish they were more vocal. I say that a lot. But what do you think some of the problems are? And that's a broad question, I know. What do you think some of the big issues law enforcement's going to be dealing with going into the future?
Well, I think privacy is a big one. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is technology is taking us over for sure. And so do we get to use ALPRs, advanced automatic license plate readers? And there are some that say we shouldn't. Should we use facial recognition? Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these tools are very, very valuable to us. But then there's those that say, no, you're going to abuse them. So I think technology is a really big thing. Social media is a big thing. I think trust is probably the big key. And I'm not saying, you know, we look at things that are brutal and look who's on trial now in Minneapolis. Yeah. And what's starting to come out is horrendous. And some of the things that people saw and the attempts to say, knock it off, or he's not breathing, or whatever it is, it does not look good. But I also think that police chiefs are afraid to talk about what they do in their department. You know, so many departments have to use these incidents as teachable moments. Mm-hmm. So you avoid that from happening in your department. Can you guarantee it won't happen? No.
No.
You know, there's human beings, and as you well know, an arrest never looks good, because if you're not going to comply, then it's going to be pretty tough for you or for me to take that person to the ground. And sometimes it's going to take more than one, and it never looks good. Never looks good. But I think reform is coming. Sometimes I think there's overreaching for reform. It may be needed. I don't think we should resist it necessarily, but there are some things that politicians are doing that are knee jerk. And it's a tough time to be a police officer. But I do believe that, you know, I actually had a guest on. It was a chief in Western Massachusetts. And he said, you know, when I talk to people, I say, please don't blame us or think that we are similar to what you saw 2,000 miles away. You know, rate us based on the way we treat you every day. And if we treat you with respect, please don't paint us with a broad brush. Now, you're not going to impact everybody, but that will win some of those silent majority that really do support police, because they need us.
Yeah. And I love what you said. I remember Rodney King, as do you. And I remember, you know, and I love what you said about please don't paint us with the same brush. But the problem is, as you know, people don't see LAPD or Chicago PD. All they see is a badge and a uniform. And like you said, a lot of people, I'm not saying everybody, but a lot of people, you know, say, well, you're a cop, you know, you must be a racist or whatever. And they paint everybody with that same brush. And that's not the case. But I like what you said, you know, trying to educate people and say, look, you know, what happened over there, and I'm not picking on LAPD or Chicago or anything like that. I'm just using that as an example. Departments are different, you know, and departments have different cultures. And and you're right. I mean, you can't paint everybody, you know, for the actions of a few. Like, and I love what you said. Are there bad cops out there? Absolutely. Good cops, the one thing they hate more than anything are bad cops. Some people don't believe that. But we don't live in the age of Serpico anymore, where, you know, we have the Knapp Commission, and, you know, NYPD is all corrupt. No, but some people believe that. And I say, that's bullshit. Most cops, 99% of the cops out there are good people. They're hardworking men and women doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think that our chiefs need to be a bit more vocal.
I believe,
go ahead.
No, I 100% agree with you, sir.
You know, they're afraid for some reason. So if that's the case, here's what I say. Then talk through your affinity group, you know, the Central Colorado Police Chiefs Association. Let it come from them. So it's there's a little bit of insulation rather than the Aurora police saying something or the Boston police chief saying something. But damn it, you got to say something. You have to be talking about what you're doing to avoid, what you're doing to be customer centric, what you're doing to make sure that we are providing the service that you need and you want. Now, I know in some places in this country, there seems to be, the cat's out of the bag that no one likes police. And that's a damn shame, because I'll tell you what, when the proverbial shit hits the fan, I hope you're calling 911, because otherwise you are absolutely on your own.
Yeah. But I love what you said, Stephen, about chiefs need to be more vocal, not just chiefs, but senior command officers. No question. It comes down to the chief. He or she is the, you know, is the main person. Mm-hmm. And your troops are wanting you to say something. They're wanting you to say something. And
stand up for us.
What's up?
Stand up for us. Talk. Yes. You know, we just had a training to avoid that from happening. Yeah. Tell the public that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway,
you mentioned,
we both get it going.
You mentioned, and that's a perfect segue into your show, the Cop Doc Podcast. For the listeners out there, you got to check out Stephen's podcast. Everything's going to be linked up in the show notes. Tell us about your podcast, because it is amazing. It's a great show.
Well, I don't know if it's amazing. It's amazing. It's a lot of work. And
don't
let me tell you,
it's amazing.
No. So I have to tell you that what happens is, and for the listeners and Patrick, you know, I couldn't be more grateful for the help and the guidance that you had given me. It is a leap of faith when you do it.
Yeah.
You don't know who the hell's going to listen to it, but the focus, and you hope somebody will, but the focus of the podcast is about policing. And it's about policing, and it's about leadership. It's about the problems of today. It's about teaching. It's about wellness. We talk about that a lot, and mental health and the issues of mental health. We just did something on co-response. In other words, putting clinicians in police cars so that they're responding together. And it's an outlet for police. So there are so many. So what I'm focusing on are people from all over the world, not just the United States, that are trying to do innovative things, that are thought leaders, and asking them questions as you do, probative, digging deep and asking them questions about how we can do this better.
Yeah. And I love what you're doing, and you have a wide variety of guests on your show, and it's not just sitting around telling war stories or cop stories.
Actually, it's none of that.
Yeah, it's none of that. And that's what I love. And I do a little bit of that sometimes. But my premise, as you know, is the same. You know, I want to talk about the issues of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I want to put the positive out there instead of just the negative and talk about officer wellness and the things that we need to do to support our brave men and women. Yeah, the Cop Doc podcast is an amazing show, brother. You're doing a kick-ass job with it.
Well, so let me just go a little further. You know, one of the things I've been able to talk to somebody from Australia. I mm-hmm. talked to the director of knowledge of the Australian Institute of Police Management. Of course, when Vicky got on the phone, I said, "Oh my God, you're the director of knowledge. You must be the smartest person in the world." And she said, I'm not, Steve. But there's so much that we can learn from other people. I've talked to people from the Garda. I talked to people from Police Service of Northern Ireland. I talked to people from the Met. I talked to people from Australia. I talked to people from Canada and plenty of people from the United States. So it's community leaders, it's thought leaders, it's academics, it's police chiefs, it's police practitioners. And it's just, it's so exciting to be able to spread the word.
And the whole purpose is to make the profession better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing, as you said. And you know, you talk about reform and stuff like that too. And I do the same thing on my show, and I'm with you, Stephen. Mm-hmm. I think reform needs to happen. I think it goes a little overboard, like we talked about mm-hmm. sometime. But so for the budding podcaster out there, you know, and I know you've been at it for a while now. What advice would you give somebody that's saying, I want to start a show. I want to start
Give it a shot, but the same advice that you have given me, it's got to be good content. So you got to find the right. So now I'm echoing what you've said to me. It has to be good content. It has to be, you can't have adult. You have to have somebody who can put a period on it. And sometimes I find myself, okay, Steve, stop talking. So Patrick can talk or whoever it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's about staying current. And Here's a trick that I use. When you finally find somebody you're going to interview, the first question I ask is, who else should I talk to?
Yeah.
Who's like you? Who do you go to? Who do you seek advice from? Who do you think is open-minded and forward-thinking? And the next thing you know, I've got two more people to potentially interview, plus a lead in. So that's good. So in terms of podcasting, look, give it a try. There's plenty of resources out there. You have to figure out who your audience will be, mm-hmm. you know, and it doesn't matter. We just talked about it before. How many do you have? And we all have a tendency to count how many people listened this week or this month.
It's important.
And as long as it's someone, it's okay. If it's 75 people that you're satisfying, terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. And so allowing me the opportunity, if you're interested, you can reach me at the Cop Talk podcast. It's copdocpodcast.com or at copdoc.podcast@gmail.com, a way to email me. And I'm interested in what you want to hear, who I might reach out for. Not everybody's going to make the cut. I mean, in some cases, we should be like The Voice or American Idol. You know, can you relate? Do you have a story to tell? And do you have the ability to talk about it and be animated in some way? Because I'm not looking for the boring person that sounds like this.
You got to engage the you know, like we're doing now. You have to be engaging.
You have to be aurally, A-U-R, aurally, inviting. So thank you for that opportunity.
Well, Dr. Stephen Morielli, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show. sharing your knowledge, experience, and advice to the listeners. Everything we talked about is going to be linked up in the show notes. And you know, Stephen, I want you back on the show.
Great.
All right.
There's so much more that we can both talk about. And you're coming back on my show too, boss.
We're just scratching the surface here, people.
Yeah.
So thank you. Stay on the lookout for Dr. Stephen Morielli in the future. So thank you, sir. Much success to you. And you know, whatever you need, you can contact me.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Patrick.
All right, brother.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.